Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Mr. Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. We have one argument to be heard this morning. It's number 12-1517, Worthington Board of Education, Franklin County Board of Revision. The appellant is North Point Distribution Center. Mr. Danziger, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Robert Danziger. I'm an attorney for the appellant in the case here before the Supreme Court. I would respectfully ask the court to allow me 4 minutes of rebuttal time. Your Honor, this case was initiated with the filing of a 2005 tax year complaint with the Franklin County County Auditor's Office. 2005 was the reappraisal year for Franklin County. Briefly, with respect to the facts, the subject property at issue is an approximate 240,000 square foot warehouse distribution center located in the city of Worthington. The subject property was initially assessed for 2005 by the county auditor at $5.6 million. The taxpayer filed a complaint seeking a value of $4,460,000. The school district, pursuant to its statutory right, filed a countercomplaint. The matter proceeded to a board of revision hearing. Your Honor, at the Board of Revision hearing, the taxpayer presented the evidence and testimony of Mr. Jason Carroll, who at that time was the Director of Development and Finance and also the in-house tax manager and appraisal for the subject entity that owned the property. Mr. Carroll also testified and submitted information regarding actual income and expenses, capitalization rates, etc. Upon conclusion of the hearing, some point after the Board of Revision issued its decision, and I will note, at the time of that Board of Revision hearing, the school board introduced absolutely no evidence whatsoever. The Board of Revision issued its decision reducing the value to the requested value by the taxpayer, namely $4,460,000, and doing so specifically wrote in the hearing worksheets that the taxpayer brought forth competent, credible, and probative evidence. That statement was also made by Mr. Kimball Stroud, who was the auditor's representative, in its oral decision and recommendation that could be heard on the audio tape that was permitted, that has been submitted as part of this record in the case today. So both written decision as well as in written notes as well as the oral recommendation, the Board of Revision found competent, credible, and probative evidence was submitted before it. The school district filed an appeal. As indicated in our briefs, this matter by both sides at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing was waived. Both parties decided, or appearance at the Board of Tax Appeals was waived. Both sides decided to allow the Board of Tax Appeals to decide the case upon the record. At that time and prior to, once again, the school district, who was the appellant in the case, provided absolutely no evidence whatsoever. Notwithstanding, the Board of Tax Appeals issued a decision reverting back to the county's original assessment. And I will urge the board, not only did the school district not provide any evidence, as contained in the county's own property record card, there was absolutely no evidence or indication as to the methodology or the process as to how the auditor originally came up to or derived its $5.6 million value. So therefore, the Board of Tax Appeals issued a decision reverting back to the county's assessment when there was nothing in the record that would justify that value. Your Honor, the BTA decision was very short. It was essentially four paragraphs. It referenced in support of its decisions and in its decision finding that the county should or that the county should revert back to its initial assessment, the BTA found that for two reasons. One, the taxpayer had failed to present competent probative evidence of value, namely any market data. And secondly, the taxpayer witness was not an expert nor an appraiser. That was the sole basis behind the Board of Tax Appeals decision.
Let me ask you a question about that, because obviously, it seems to be accepted that there, that the owner of property can present an opinion of value. Whether or not the person presenting the opinion is an expert. And so the BTA made some findings here that could be seen as a little confusing. Is it your understanding that the BTA thought that the income approach that was presented was not competent to be admitted because it was not an owner's opinion? Or what exactly is your understanding of the BTA's objection?
The objection, based upon its written decision, was that Mr. Carroll was not an appraiser nor an expert. That seems to be the basis of the Board of Tax Appeals decision. And this court has held on numerous occasions that an owner's opinion does not have to present, or a taxpayer does not have to present, an expert or an appraiser. The Dayton Montgomery case, the Amsdell case, and most recently the East Bank case. In all those cases, there were not, well, I'm sorry, East Bank case did have an appraiser, but the Amsdell case and the Dayton Montgomery case, the Supreme Court has held that the taxpayer's evidence is probative evidence, notwithstanding there was no use of an appraiser or an expert.
Well, there's also a statement in the BTA's decision to the effect that the actual written income approach may have been prepared by counsel rather than by the taxpayer. Is it your understanding that what did the BTA do with that finding in your reading of the decision?
In my reading, that finding by the BTA lacks complete merit. There's absolutely nothing in the record that the taxpayer's counsel prepared the information. In fact, if you read or if you listen to the audio tape, Mr. Carroll testifies specifically that this was his approach. This was his information that he submitted. Now, the counsel clearly could have put it in written form, but the analysis was done by Mr. Carroll, who testified of his extensive knowledge and experience in the real estate industry as a whole, and his specific knowledge as to this particular property and the marketplace in which it was located. Those facts are extremely similar to the case in the First Interstate case, Your Honor, in which this Supreme Court held on very similar facts, where the only thing in the record was actual income and expense statements, and the Supreme Court held in that case that that evidence was certainly competent and probative. There was no necessity for an appraiser. With respect then, in follow-up to your question, with respect to Mr. Carroll as a competent witness, the Tokels decision, which we provided in the brief, which is a Supreme Court case, that describes what a finding of fact needs to look at with respect to a witness. Is, does the witness have sufficient knowledge and experience, more so than the common person, with respect to the particular property and the marketplace in which that property is located. Clearly, the record in this case and the evidence in the case demonstrate that Mr. Carroll had that requisite knowledge and experience. Your Honor, the BTA decision, which, once again, I will emphasize, in the majority opinion, cites absolutely no Supreme Court precedent in support of its opinion, although the dissenting opinion does, by Mr. Jorant. It is flawed for several significant reasons. First and foremost, the school district was the appellant in this case. Yet notwithstanding, the school district came forth with absolutely no evidence. It failed to meet its burden of proof. And in the Dayton Montgomery case, as well as most recently the East Bank case, The Supreme Court has clearly announced and pronounced that the appellant going forward has to meet its burden of proof, whether it be a taxpayer or a school district.
But isn't the other side of that, the case law, albeit case law that was not actually cited by the BTA, but the case law that says that the BTA has a duty to independently weigh the evidence, including the evidence that was presented at the BOR, the implication of that being that if the BTA, as a fact finder, looks at this income approach at the BOR and finds that it's not credible, that it can simply then say that that evidence is not probative and then go back to the auditor's valuation.
And I think there's a distinction in some of those cases that you're referencing where the county initially assesses at value A and the Board of Revision finds value A. And therefore, it's incumbent upon the appellant on appeal to bring forth evidence that then the BTA has to independently look. That's not the facts of this particular case. We have a situation here where the county assessed the value, initially assessed it at $5.6 million, and then the Board of Revision, including the county auditor's rep himself, determined that there was competent, probative, and credible evidence. Essentially, the county auditor disavowed his initial assessment. The fact that the BTA did not find in this case that there was competent, probative evidence, once again, I think that the rational or the reasoning behind that is flawed. How can the BTA determine that the evidence submitted at the Board of Revision was not competent, probative, and credible when the Board of Revision itself did? The Board of Revision, including the county auditor's rep, we have to presume that the county auditor or the county Board of Revision is in a far superior position than a Board of Tax Appeals hearing officer or Board of Tax Appeals member to determine the credibility of the witnesses and the evidence before it. The Board of Revision hears hundreds, or if not thousands, of cases. What comes before the Board of Revisions of hundreds or thousands of witnesses?
Well, there's several aspects to what you're saying, including that the Board of Revision is a set of county officials and the BTA isn't. But didn't the BTA fault the income approach as being flawed because of the lack of general market data, the reliance specifically on the income and expenses of this particular property?
They did.
And why is that not a sufficient ground for finding that it's not probative?
Because this court has already found in the in the First Interstate Hawthorne case, that providing actual income and expense statements and not having an appraiser testify to the market is sufficient evidence. And in this case, it was even more telling when the Board of Revision itself found that there was competent probative evidence of value and so stated. Your Honor, the BTA's decision is also flawed in the fact that the BTA reverts back to the auditor's original assessment. Based upon the case law in Dayton, Montgomery County, followed by First Interstate, and then most recently in East Bank, reverting back to the auditor's initial value is unreasonable and unlawful, especially when the appellant, the school district, fails to provide any information or evidence to support the value. It's especially troublesome in this case when the BTA wants to revert to the $5.6 million of the auditor's original assessment when there's nothing in the record that even supports or tells anyone how the county initially came up with that $5.6 million value. Finally, Your Honor, the BTA does not cite, and as I indicated, any Supreme Court decision with respect to its analysis. I see that I'm coming close to the end of my time. Your Honor, with respect to the larger picture of this particular case, reverting back to the auditor's original assessment is extremely troublesome. First, it's giving Board of Education's, and it will if this court upholds that decision, it will give school districts carte blanche to file appeals on every single Board of Revision decision that changes its initial decision that comes forth by a taxpayer. It will file an appeal. It will then put the burden on the taxpayer to come forth with additional information. That's been the case. It's been happening, Your Honor. And in my brief, I've cited numerous occasions where a taxpayer will come in and submit evidence. The Board of Revision will reduce the value. And then the school district files an appeal, does absolutely nothing else. And then the BTA reverts back to the auditor's initial assessment. This also turns 100 years of jurisprudence on its head. What court system allows an appellant to file an appeal and then do absolutely nothing but then prevail? This cannot be the case, especially in a situation like this, where the Board of Revision heard the evidence and determined it to be competent and probative. It's also allowing, Your Honor, and you touched on this, it's allowing the Board of Tax Appeals to sidestep its statutory obligation to independently weigh the evidence. What the Board of Tax Appeals is doing, it seems to be taking the easy way out and indicating, well, the taxpayer has not provided any additional information, the school district filed an appeal, notwithstanding they didn't provide information, we're going to revert back to the county's auditor. That simply can't happen. Your Honor, we would ask this court to overrule the Board of Tax Appeals decision, affirm the decision by the Board of Revision in setting the value at $4,460,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Danziger. Ms. Gorey.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, I'm Kelly Gorey of Rich and Gillis Law Group, representing the appellee Worthington City Schools. I wanted to start with an issue that I think is really important in this case, which is the Board of Education's burden of proof. I think there's been a misstatement that the Board of Education has not met its burden of proof. In 2005, in a case called Vandalia Butler City Schools, the court first held that a Board of Education on appeal can actually meet its burden of proof through cross-examination of the witnesses or through a post-hearing brief, and that when the appeal concerns a claim of legal error, that the Board of Revision erred in granting a reduction to the property in the first place, it may not be necessary for the Board of Education to present independent valuation evidence on appeal. And that again, the court discussed in the 2011 Vandalia Butler case, in which they directly stated that proof of a new value is not required by a Board of Education on appeal when it is seeking a return to the auditor's original value. That's exactly what has happened here. The Board of Education pursued the appeal claiming legal error, that the Board of Revision erred in granting a substantial reduction in value when the property owner had not come forth with competent and probative evidence of value. And as the BTA stated in its decision, it could not affirm the BOR decision because there's no market support for the actual income and expenses in the owner's opinion of value.
Let me ask you about the other aspect of the BTA decision that I pursued with counsel, and that is this question of whether or not there's a valid owner's opinion of value, whether or not Mr. Carroll's testimony should qualify as part of that opinion. What is your understanding of the BTA's decision there? Did the BTA find that there simply was not a competent, admissible owner's opinion of value or not?
Correct. The BTA found that there was not a competent owner's opinion of value because Mr. Carroll, who testified, is an employee of the member of the corporate entity that owns the property. He is not actually even an employee of the actual owner of the property. And if you would look to Justice Pfeiffer's concurrence in a case called LTC Properties, he stated that, it was in fact the same testimony presented there. It was the testimony of a employee property tax manager of the parent company there, rather than a member. Justice Pfeiffer noted that if a corporate entity wants to challenge a valuation, it has to send an actual expert, and that the property tax manager in that case implicitly would not qualify as an owner. But Mr. Carroll also doesn't meet the Tokels and Sons case. He is neither an officer or a shareholder of a closely held corporation. This is not a closely held corporation.
Well, first of all, though, with respect to the idea that Mr. Carroll was not employed by the actual property owner, the property owner is merely an LLC that holds this particular property on behalf of the entity that actually owns the LLC, right?
Correct.
And Mr. Carroll was employed by that entity that owned the LLC.
Correct.
So, sir, is it your position that that is an impediment to his qualifying as an owner for purpose of giving an opinion?
No, I'm sorry. My position is that he's neither an officer or a shareholder of the actual company that owns the property. And under Tocol's, you would have to be one of those things, and you would have to demonstrate sufficient personal, intimate knowledge with the property.
What about the quality of his knowledge of the property?
I think he demonstrated fairly sufficient knowledge of the property, but notwithstanding, he's not an officer or a shareholder of the actual property owner entity that owns the property.
Okay.
The next thing that I wanted to discuss is there's been a suggestion that the fact that the BOR found this evidence to be competent and probative, that somehow requires the BTA to affirm its decision. And I think that issue was squarely addressed by the 2011 Vandalia Butler case, in which the court held the BTA has a duty to independently weigh all of the evidence, and it may only affirm the BOR decision if it reviews all the evidence in the record and can conclude independently that the very value found by the Board of Education is supported by the existing evidence. And here, the BTA could not do that.
What about the argument the council made that the not only the BOR as a whole, but the auditor, the auditor's delegate, himself stated this is competent, credible, probative, adopts the new reduced value. Does that provide a problem in then reverting to the auditor's valuation where the auditor's own delegate has in some sense disavowed it?
No, not at all. And in fact, that is directly addressed in the 2011 Vandalia Butler case. One of the reasons there that the BTA affirmed the BOR reduction in that case was that the auditor made no attempt to support his original value. And the court actually noted in a footnote that it doesn't matter. It was of little consequence. I think the words they used were by itself does not disprove the auditor's original value because the BTA has an independent duty to review that evidence, and it's a de novo review. So in fact, since you cannot defer to the BOR's decision and the auditor's, essentially it's irrelevant that the auditor and the BOR granted a substantial reduction in value. And the reason there being also because there was not enough evidence in the record to affirmatively negate the auditor's original value. And in Vandalia Butler, the court explained that even if there is some evidence that may potentially negate the auditor's value, there has to be enough evidence in the record for the BTA to independently determine value. And when they cannot do that, because the record lacks the evidence the BTA needs, which it found here, they have to reinstate the auditor's original value because there's no other value to be reinstated. And then the final thing I wanted to discuss is that the facts of this case actually are quite similar to LTC Properties. There it was a property owner's employee who was a tax manager, presented the actual income and expense statements to the BOR. In that case, the BOR did not grant a reduction, but as I've suggested, it's irrelevant. The court held that the state of the evidence that LTC Properties had presented was insufficient to negate the auditor's original value and actually trigger the duty of either the county or the Board of Education to support a different value on appeal. And in that case, the Board of Revision decision affirming the auditor's value was affirmed, and the concurring opinion noted that the proper way for a corporate entity to challenge a valuation is by presenting an appraisal of a certified appraiser. And I think that is all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gorey. Mr. Danziger, you've reserved 12 seconds, but you may take an entire minute for rebuttal.
I thought I reserved 4 minutes, Your Honor.
Well, we usually allow counsel to watch the time, and the red light came on.
I'll speak briefly. Thank you.
Have a minute.
Your Honor, the Board of Tax Appeals decision overturned the Board of Revisions decision for two reasons. It deemed Mr. Carroll's testimony and the evidence not to be competent and probative, and it didn't like the fact that Mr. Carroll was an expert or an appraiser. Once again, and I disagree with my colleague, the Tokel's decision does not require that Mr. Carroll be an owner of the company or an officer or an employee. The importance of the Tokel's decision is it talks about the reasoning behind a witness, and the reasoning is very important. Does the witness have sufficient and requisite knowledge and skill regarding the specific property and the marketplace? He did, he does, and the record was clear about that issue. Number two, Ms. Gorey referenced Mr. Pfeiffer's footnote in a concurring opinion, and she misstated that Mr. Pfeiffer indicates that the taxpayers have to have an appraisal report. No, that's not what he said. He cautioned that it would have been easier in that case if there had been an appraisal report. There's certainly no requirement. There's no requirement in the administrative code, in the statutes.
I'm going to have to close down the rebuttal,
okay.
Mr. Danziger.
Thank you
very much. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.